You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time with actor Terry Notary. Terry has acted in a number of major franchises, ranging from The Hobbit, rebooted Planet of the Apes series, and Kong Skull Island. And Terry is back in Avengers Infinity War, where he plays Cull Obsidian and Teen Groot. In this episode, we get to talk to Terry about what it takes to create a CGI character, how things have changed in the special effects world, and his favorite franchise experiences. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Terry, thank you so much for chatting with me. It's a real privilege to speak to you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
With your job is so unique in so many ways, working as an actor and as a movement coach, I was wondering, what exactly is that and what interested you in this area of acting?
It all started, I was in Cirque du Soleil for 5 years, and all began then. I was a gymnast at UCLA before that, and very physical, and I'd learned the technique of gymnastics, but it wasn't until I joined the Cirque that I learned how to perform, and I wish I had known performance as well as technique. And what I try to do is I took a lot of the same principles that we used in Cirque creating characters, and built upon those with techniques that I've learned. And so it's finding that sort of balance between the technical aspects of things versus the emotional. And everyone has their own emotional blueprint. And basically, what I've found through the past 18 years working with actors is that everyone is unique. Everyone is different. So there's no formula that I use for each person that works. Everyone is got their own blueprint, and you're basically, your life is a blueprint of your body is a blueprint of your life. It is a reflection of everything that you've been through, all your past traumas and your experiences and your successes and your identity, yourself, your sense of self. Who am I? Who are you? Is a reflection of everything physical in your body. I mean, when you have an experience, it marries itself into you. And when you're an actor, what you need to do is like playing. I like to refer to it like being a musician. You have an instrument, and your instrument is able to emote chords. It's emote music, and it's through emotion and through feeling. And when you understand what your instrument is and what your habits are and what your tendencies are, then you can modify those in order to use the things that are pertinent to the character that you're playing and undo the things that are not. So basically, the work that I do is it's not movement. There's no other term for what I do, but I call it movement choreography or movement coaching. But really, it's about life, and it's about learning about who you are. And what I do is, if we start sitting in a chair and sitting and standing from a chair, do a lot of the sort of Alexander work, and I can sort of get a sense of the blocks and the tensions and the habits that are sort of innate in the person. And then we can start to work through those and identify with what they are, the emotions that behind those things, so that we become a blank slate. But ultimately, the purpose of all of that work that we do over the course of maybe three days or whatever is undoing and identifying with tension and fear. And fear is a big thing. People think fear, oh God, I shouldn't feel afraid at all. But that's quite the opposite. When you're an actor or an acrobat or an athlete, it's all the same. You have to, what I call, embrace the fear. And when you embrace fear. Then you extinguish its power, and you can use it as a fuel to propel you into action. And you can use it to widen your peripheral and sharpen your senses and listen and hear and feel and become more alive, basically. When you fight fear, you empower the fear, and it is the worst enemy of an actor or an acrobat or a performer or a musician, anyone, or just a normal business person. It doesn't matter. So when people think, oh, I shouldn't feel afraid, that's wrong, because fear is great to have. Fear is energy. Fear is anticipation and fuel. It's the ultimate fuel. And when you learn how to stop trying to hide from fear or your real issues, that we have to like look at ourselves for real and go, ah, oh, that's me. I'm that's what I do, and I'm gonna identify with that, and I'm going to use it when I need it and not when I don't, you know, and creating this neutral body is really about creating a presence that you have in yourself that is open, aware, vulnerable, soft, but with integrity. So it's like finding a balance, and we work with the mind and the body balance. And the mind is like a little child that wants to be in charge, and it wants to know what's happening, and it wants to kind of guide and govern and sort of be the boss. And when you can take the mind, I call it sitting the mind in a hammock, and you actually allow the mind to soften into a connection with your body. And this takes you know, a couple of days to get really dialed into where you are when you're doing it. And I can see it happen. The person becomes more aware, more beautiful, open. There's like this sort of depth that happens, that when the mind is trying to charge and be in charge and run and regulate, there's a surface of awareness that there's a sort of a frontal surface presence that we have, and it's immediate, and it's like fight or flight. But when you undo that tension, that sort of connect with the body, and you allow the mind to soften, it's not like you're slacking or you're relaxing at all. You're actually becoming more aware and deep and centered and grounded and neutral. And you still feel all the same things. It's not like, oh, fear goes away. No, you still feel fear. You still feel pain. You still feel happiness. You still feel all these amazing things, but even more so. And you allow them to wash through you. So rather than trying to guard, oh, I don't want to feel that right now, you allow the feeling to wash through your body and extinguish itself in time, and find its sort of go through its course.
Wow.
So that, what I call and I think is the foundation of being a good actor, a great actor, are those are the actors that are the ones that are, they step into a room and they feel fear, but they think of it as like wind on a cliff. You know, you're standing there naked at the edge of a cliff, and the wind is you know, pushing against your body, and you can tense up and freak out, or you can just embrace this sort of sense of like open, wide expansiveness, and then things will happen, and then you'll be able to take time, and actually you won't be trying to end mark objectives that your mind says, oh, I got to make sure that I pick up that apple on the table and take a bite out of it before he says that line, you know. Well, when you have this soft connection, the apple will be there if it needs to be, and it'll all happen. It's allowing that trust to wait and to be open and aware and vulnerable and sensitive and soft, but have this integrity. I call it soft connected integrity with the whole body. So you're actually more powerful in a relaxed state. And it's one of those things where you have to actually work with someone and then see it happening to them. There it is. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, I was doing it. I was in this state. It was amazing. But the mind comes in and it judges it and it goes, okay, well, this, I was just doing it. Now I want to try to replicate that. And then the fear comes in and I can't do it again. Oh shit. And then they're fighting the fear and they're trying not to be afraid. But so you kind of go back to that cycle where you go, okay, create the neutral. Let's go back to neutral.
Hmm.
And then you can allow it to happen again and you feel it and there it is. And pretty soon it's like undoing a habitual muscle that's constantly grabbing, like a fist that wants to grab. It's undoing this sort of like idea that it needs to be hardworking. Because we're trained as human beings, we're trained that hard work is rewarded. You know, when you're a kid at school, you know, it's like, work hard, come on guys, get working. You know, so you grimace your face, you tense up, you punch over your paper and you bite your lip and you say, I'm working hard, you know, where we kind of discourage kids from daydreaming and going off into these super creative, soft places that are actually more creative and more rewarding. So it's kind of like undoing the idea of hard work and embracing the sort of trust that things will unfold in this body, in your new state of being, that will actually make you more interesting. And you can actually guide yourself. You can guide, the mind becomes a guide rather than a boss. And so you're actually watching yourself do this and you're going, this is working and I'm going to continue to allow this to happen. So that's the sort of the final step is continuing to allow it to happen and unfold. I'm nailing this scene. I feel it's awesome. I'm kicking ass. But you're going to continue to allow it to happen and softly guide it. And I know I have to hit a mark and I have to, you know, accomplish this line with this person, but I'm going to be open and receptive to anything that happens and not force my thing into, you know, a square into a round hole. So whatever. So it gives you flexibility and freedom, but it's scary. It's very scary, you know?
Mm.
And once you learn to just, you know, embrace that fear and just use it and just allow the moment to unfold in time, then you're not acting anymore. You're being, and you're this sort of vehicle of expression that channels the real moments and turns them into something that you're reacting to in for real. That's kind of the process. You know, so I'm not like, okay, I want you to move your hand like this and put your foot like this and do that. But we do a lot of breakdown on your walk. I mean, the person's walk is the second thing that I work on after the chair work and the breathing work and the soft connection behind the eyes and the mind-body connection. I can see when they drop in and they're like, oh, you feel that? Yes, I do. I feel it. Oh, my God. I feel so wide and open and... is this enough? It's like, yes, that's exactly what you want to do right there. Mm. Everyone thinks they need to push a little bit harder, you know, and then that brings in the tension and the effort and then the idea of what you want to do. And then everyone sees that as an audience. You see the idea of an actor that's trying to hit an idea they've thought of, and you go, okay, I can see what they were going for. But when you don't have that, you're like, damn, you're just in it. You're just in it with them, and you don't know why it's good, but you're there, and you're being carried through the story with that person. So that's it in a nutshell. That's the kind of work I do with actors, and everyone is completely different and unique in their own way and in their sort of undoing of like, well, I'm famous, and I'm rich and people love me for who I am and who I portray and what I do in movies, but they maybe have played the same character 4 or 5 times with a different costume. And so once they learn how to sort of trust this getting to know your habits and what you do, then they can really go deep and play anything and something that's totally different than themselves because they understand themselves first and foremost.
I feel like I just had a master class. This is amazing. I didn't realize you know, hearing your process, this is just fantastic. It's funny, you know, I know you were Rocket in the Apes movies, and one of the things you feel very strongly, it's one of the, I'm a big fan of that, the reboot franchise, is the soul of the characters. You know, a character like Rocket or Caesar, and that you know, especially when Reeves was directing, you know, focusing on their faces, and you can sort of get the sense that the depth of their characters, and it just, you know, just hearing you talk about the process of coming into that, I really can sense it.
It's real, like people say, acting. You know, which it is. Acting is just channeling reality for you. You know, it's really not. For me, I mean, that's what I think it is. When you're pretending or trying, it doesn't quite hit the mark.
The mark, yeah.
I think it needs to hit than when you're sort of being it. You know, mm-hmm. it sounds so cliche. It really is, but when you're doing it and you're allowing it to continue to happen, then it's like, oh my gosh, you come out and you just like, wow. Okay, I had all these missiles and bombs exploding around me, but I kept cool and I kept soft and open, and I was able to actually hear things around me and and receive impulses that I would have looked past had I been thinking. And it's not that you don't think. It's not that, because people go, oh, should I just shut off and just like go into this like sort of zombie state with my eyes and just drop my lids down and, you know, sort of sit with a slouch. No, you're actually lifting. You're actually grounding yourself down through your body into the ground, as well as lifting through the intention of up. And so there's an upward intention with things, and then it could drop down when it needs to, and become down intention and a forward. And there's a back body that we work with, and there's like the middle body, and then there's the front body, you know. So there's all these different ways of receiving and sending energy that we're made of energy. We're like 99% energy, right? So all we're really doing is reading each other's energy anyways. I mean, you can sit there and talk until the cows come home, but really you're reading energy and you're feeling it. And we see it and we're moved by it, and when someone feels a certain way, that energy goes into your cells and it evokes emotion. It moves your cells. It moves your body. It changes the cellular structure of your body. And just knowing that as an actor is like, oh my gosh, yeah. You know, I'm not just hands and face and dialogue and trying to hear how I'm sounding. Another thing is allowing yourself to be ugly and allowing yourself to be exposed. I work a lot with that, becoming exposed and naked and not having the, you know, the clenched jaw and the look with the forehead and the eyes and the thing, because that just becomes habitual, and it's sort of a protection. You know, we have all these little protections in ourselves, and there's nothing more vulnerable or sensitive than an actor. No matter how they act on the red carpet, you know, you've got to be insecure and sensitive and vulnerable if you're going to be a good actor. So, which is all good stuff, you know. Yeah. It's like tapping back into that and allowing yourself to be scared, allowing yourself to be not feel right, and to just trust that is part of this, you know, part of this process.
Sure.
So, anyways, yeah. I could talk till tomorrow about it all, but you know, once you're working with someone, all the things come up, and they're all different, and they're all. The body really is a blueprint of your life, and you can see how someone walks, where their life has taken them, and how it's affected them, and what they could do to sort of create this neutral state again, you know, because really when you look at a five-year-old kid sitting at the beach looking out into the horizon of the ocean, Their posture is beautiful and open and just like, wow, it's like so simple, you know. And to tap back into that state, you're creating a character.
Sure.
and allow mistakes to happen. Mistakes, you know, and a lot of things that I work with is let's make tons of mistakes so that we know what it's not. And then in the mistakes, you find little gems and you go, whoa, what was that? What was that? That's amazing. What do you mean? What did I just do? You just turned and it was like, you looked over and it was like, what was happening? Well, I was actually thinking about my, you know, my mother and her, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, wow, let's tap into some of that. That's amazing, you know. And then you start discovering these things that are screaming out to come out subconsciously, and all of a sudden you can start to create beautiful moments with those subconscious things that are trying to speak through you.
Sure. With the Infinity War coming up, you're playing both teenage Groot and one of Thanos' children, Cull Obsidian. And with all this process that you're talking about, is it difficult to visualize yourself as two very different characters in the same film? Is that a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, I love working with act. I love being busy. Sure. I don't like sitting around and waiting for, you know, to work. I like to constantly be working. So I've had the privilege of playing characters and working with actors that are playing characters as well. So it's been, I'm always really, really busy, which is great. And I love that. And I don't see it as strange to play these two very different characters. It's kind of fun. And it's kind of like when I put, you know, the name tag on for Groot, it's totally different than when I put the name tag on for Cull Obsidian. They're totally different. Totally different creatures. But they're all, you know, but with every character that I play, I try to find something out about myself. I try to always learn about who I am by making the mistakes of the character and trying to figure out who this is, what this is. And then I usually just go on I just go on walks on the beach, and I'll just start really tapping into who it is, what it is. And for me, Cull was this voice. He had a voice, and he had intelligence. And he had inner dialogue that was going on. And so you kind of get a sense that this is not a hulking, brutish, you know, crusher that without any feeling. He's actually got a lot of feeling going on, which I think is, you know, was really fun with that character. Once I found that voice inside, then I had this internal dialogue, and I could just be in my own world and play the world as I saw it, you know. Through his eyes.
Can you talk about how things may have changed? You know, you've been doing this now for, I think you said, 19 years. Like, things must be different. I think the first time we ever had a role of somebody taking on a live action was technically, I think, Jar Jar Binks, and that's 20 years ago. Has the process changed a lot over the time that you've been doing this?
Well, yeah, with the performance capture especially. I mean, you know, I started on performance capture on Avatar with Jim Cameron, and he, you know, introduced me to that whole world of, like, you can be a, you know, 5'8", you know, muscular gymnast and be a 10-foot tall, skinny, you know, creature. I'm like, what? Wow. This is opening up a whole new world, you know? And what I find when I'm working with actors who just start putting on these performance capture suits is that it's like going back to theater. When I was working with Josh Brolin on Thanos, he's like, dude, this is like going back to theater. It's like I'm physical. I'm embodying everything about this character, from the way he stands, the way he holds himself into the earth, to the soft intellectual reasoning that goes on in the back of his mind. You know, it's so diverse and so powerful. He was digging it. He was really digging it. And with the performance capture, when you get into a suit and you get into a character, that character teaches you more about yourself than anything else could ever. Because you're like, you put two different people in the same character in a volume, and they look totally different. One character looks weak and meek, and one looks super strong. And you know, it's like, wow. And they're the same exact person. They're the same exact character. But, you know, and you're seeing it live action in real time in 3D. And it just makes people go, whoa. Now, when I feel a certain way and I do this and this and this, the whole character changes. And that's how it works. And so it really is the best tool for actors, I think, that once they're done performance capture and they've played a character that's totally different than themselves and that they've had to embody this whole different physique and this stature and this size and everything about it is different than what they've done before, then it really challenges you as an actor to sort of, you know, figure out how to undo all the crap that makes you up. It has become the idea of who you are, you know?
Yeah.
And you sort of go, okay, wow, that is not the character that I'm playing. You know, I'm playing something totally different, so I have to really come to terms with who I am first, and then you can sort of undo those things.
Yeah.
It's more of a self-discovery thing, you know? But the technology has gotten so good now, too, that over the years it's become just... So every little nuance, every little detail is read. You know, a little slit of the eye and even just a subtle shift in emotion, and you see it on the character. So Josh kills it as Thanos in this film. He does. It's like he plays this, you know, I can't give anything away really, but he plays this really, really great version of a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't play it bad. He doesn't play it like you think you would. You know, it plays it in a way that's even scarier.
You haven't said this, but I think it might have been Kevin Feige, if I'm saying his name right, but somebody recently said that this was Thanos' movie in many ways, that so much of this film he's in that people wouldn't expect, so you get a lot deeper into his character, or at least that's what they have said.
Yes, I think, yeah. When you see his role in it, you're going to go, okay, cool, he's back. You're going to like it when he's in the movie. Yeah. You're going to like the moments when he comes back in and you see his... Because you side with him. You can understand him. You can sympathize.
We actually spoke with Sean Gunn a couple weeks ago. He had nothing but great things to say about you, by the way. He was
He said
you're a hell of an actor, were his exact words.
Thanks.
But I was wondering, is there anyone in particular that... I know that he plays Rocket, for example, and I'm sure that...
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anyone in particular over the course of your career that sort of mentored you in this sort of process, or in particular that you've sort of felt really connected to? You've been involved in some huge franchises over the last however many years.
When Jim Cameron called me up and said, hey, I want you to come down and read this script. It's called Avatar. And I said, okay, cool. I'll be honored. He's like, it's like 350 pages, so... Do you have, like, 4 hours or 5 hours? I'm like, yeah. And we had this conversation afterwards that was just, it was really, he's such a great director because he's really good at pushing people to become the best that they can be because he expects that. And he hired me on the spot when we had our conversation after I read the script.
Wow.
And the trust that he put in me on this film, you know, that was his baby of 10 years, that had all this, you know, incredible technology and groundbreaking, cutting-edge, you know, stuff that was going to happen. And he trusted me. And I went home and I just started doing research, and I did like 3 months of research studying tribes and this and that, and I just poured myself into it because of his belief in me. And he sort of instilled this sort of belief in myself that I could do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I did. And then, you know, it was I owe him a lot for that, you know. Mm. Just him actually, like, trusting me. And the same with Peter Jackson, you know, same thing. You know, I worked with him for 2 years on the Hobbit trilogy and sat next to him in the tent every day. And he became a good friend and a mentor, and we jammed on the film, you know, and we just liked fixing things together. And he became like a mentor to me as well, and he's inspired me to direct my first film. And that's in the works now. And
oh, you're going to direct?
Totally grateful to him for that as well. So, yeah, I mean, there's been quite a few. Matt Reeves is another, you know, who's just been really cool friend. And it's, you know, about jamming, I think it's about, like if you're a musician and you get to jam with good musicians, you become better.
Right.
They push you to be the best you can be. And you realize that, I just have to undo the effort, really.
Yeah.
Jam, you know, and just trust and be there and, you know, and really just open up to like, other potentials and this and that and, you know, like, of what the characters can be and the thing and the, you know.
Yeah.
It's, I always go back to it, undoing the effort. Now, effort is overrated. Not about not trying hard. You're actually trying way harder by undoing this forcefulness.
Yeah.
And the creativity will kind of boom, it unfolds like a flower, you know? So it's, you know, that's kind of what I try to teach the actors that I work with as well.
With everything you've said is just incredible. The process that you've been outlining is, I don't think I've ever heard it put so clearly. Was it a different experience for you, having seen The Square, to be in that role without the special effects, but to take on that role of the human performer and whatnot in what is easily the most uncomfortable dinner party I've seen in years?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the funniest part about the whole thing is I tried to, when I went into that scene, you know, we had one day of rehearsal. And we didn't know what we were going to do. We really didn't know what we were going to do. It was in the script, it was performance artist comes in, impersonates a monkey, it said in the script, and a monkey impersonator comes in and terrorizes the dinner scene. Great, that's wide open, you know. That's wide open for whatever happens.
Sure.
And so I tried to not plan anything, and I tried to adhere to what I've been working with actors on forever, and it's just do not come in with preconceived ideas of what I'm going to do, but listen and respond and let them charge the room and let them charge me with fear that I will embrace and I will use as fuel to propel myself into the actions that I need to accomplish. And it was scary as hell, but it was great too, because it could have froze me, but I wanted to allow the moments to just unfold. And that's one of the things about Ruben Osland, who's just so wonderful. He's an amazing guy, good friend. He allows moments to unfold in real time and in time. He doesn't force marks to be hit because you need to get on to the next thing. You know, it's kind of like when you're in a conversation with somebody and they're in a hurry to get the conversation over and you sense that conversation. So you're not completely engaged with that person because you know that they've got to go somewhere and they've got to accomplish something else. They've got to go, you know, pick up the kids school, so they're not quite engaged with you completely, because in the back of their mind they're trying to actually figure out how the traffic's going to be.
Right.
And we sense that, you know, no matter how powerful the words are or how, you know, much the inflections are, if the intention is not there and completely engrossed, then you're not present. And so what I wanted to do in this film, in that movie, was totally immerse myself 100% into the moments and lose myself, sort of the sense of who, you know, myself, and become invisible. And then just listen. So it was scary, but it was fun. You know, it was really fun to sort of play. And like, Dominic and I didn't know what we were going to do. I said, hey, Dominic, I'm a huge fan of yours, man. I love your work, dude. I'm going to scare you out of the room. That was our... I'm going to chase the alpha male out of the room. Okay, cool. Let's do it. And You know, that's what happens.
now with the other in that scene, you talk about Dominic, but did the other actors have any idea what was going to happen? Like,
not really. No.
Wow.
Kind of all didn't quite know what was going to happen, and I just kind of knew that I was going to mess with some people. And Ruben started shaping the scene as things were unfolding that he really liked. I liked when he went to that blonde lady. Can you please like revisit her and. Can you cross between these two tables instead of those two tables? For sure. Yeah, great. You know, so it was more of blocking out where the path was going to go. But and then, you know, people would come up and say, hey, you can pick me if you want. We can do a fight if you want. You know, push me down. I don't care. You know, you can push me. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to push you. And I'm not going to pick that person because they have something set in their mind that they want to do. And it's not going to work. So I went up to the people that were... that wanted to be picked the least. And I was like, okay, we're going to get something good out of this because this woman has been looking away from me all day long. She won't even say hi to me in the hallway.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to have an engagement. This is going to be good. And things like that would unfold. And then Ruben was like, I love that scene. Let's repeat that. So I would repeat it, but I would come around a different way, go to a different side of the person, trick them into thinking that I wasn't going to come, and then I did, and then, okay, so then it was always, and then I was surprised, and I would be fresh and scared, momentarily scared, and then I'll embrace it, and then boom, what's going to happen, you know? So that was how that scene worked out, and it was fun. It's fun. It's really no different than the work we do in performance graphic at all, but the only difference is that after the film, people are like, hey, that's the guy from the movie. Yeah, I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? Oh my God, you're nice. people were kind of like, look at you, like, are you that guy in there? You know, like, no, hey, how you doing? Oh my God, you actually talk. So it's kind of fun. It's fun to see that. And I want to do more live action roles. Yeah, I definitely do. I want to play some really. Kind of trippy characters. I'm really into like playing another human character that's got, I don't know, a bunch of different, you know, things going on in his head.
You know, speaking of trippy characters, as I said, you've played a number of trippy characters. Is there any particular type of role or a character you've preferred or a franchise you've enjoyed more than others that you've enjoyed being a part of? And I'm sure you've enjoyed being a part of all of them, but.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Apes is by far one of my favorite memories because we started out with Rise and everyone was freaked out. We're like, how are we going to make human beings look like apes in a motion capture? How's it going to work? And we just workshopped it for like 6 weeks and then boom, it was it. It was like, there it is. That's what it is. It's not about playing an ape at all. It's not about playing an ape. It's about being a deep, connected, well-rounded, open, honest human being. And then you look like an ape because we are apes. We're animals. Apes just have this depth and this gravitas and this thickness and this integrity that is just so powerful and deep that it's really, when you tap into that as a human being, you're like, oh my God, this is me, powerful. This is who I am in my best state. And so for Rocket, for me, was in my best state. And he was honest and open and had integrity and did the right thing. And he, you know, he was the true friend. You know, and without regard for himself, there was no selfish intentions behind anything that he did, and so that for me was sort of fun to tap into, you know, as a person trying to grow into a man that I felt good about and learning about who that part of me was, and I found that through that character. So that's why that kind of sticks with me as being a big growing period, and working with Andy and and the team of, you know, Karen and Steve's on, and you know, Woody and all these guys that are really good friends and really close, where we just, it didn't feel like a movie set at all. It felt like kind of like a house or home that we would revisit and kind of all grow up in. And every movie we kind of went, hey, let's try something this time. Let's really become, you know, connected on this one. You know, and let's take what we did on the last film and go that much further with it, you know, especially with our communications and how we work and, you know, anyways.
Yeah. And you could see that as the films went on, the characters became, they develop, obviously they develop because the characters develop, but you could sense that their portrayals were developing as well and becoming more grounded.
Yeah, we tried less hard.
Yeah.
But we had deeper things happening. And that's what I feel like people get. And we don't have to spoon feed things to people. We had secrets amongst one another. And that those secrets are felt. You know, that's one of the things that the director, Franco Dragon, of the Cirque du Soleil told us, you know, in the first month of training in Montreal, was like, you must have secrets between one another on stage. You have to have an internal life that happens outside of what you're telling people on stage, because that life will just fuel all the little nuances that people are going to go, that was great, and I loved that character. Don't know why, but I felt like I had a connection to that character. Subtleties, nuances, details, and an intelligent audience. That is really what we got to understand. People are super intelligent, and we just sometimes think that we need to spoon feed things to people when really you just don't even need to say it at all because they get it.
As we wrap up here, Terry, everything you're talking about, it brings a question to me. Is there such a depth of performance taking place? And there's been a lot of talk in recent years about not just Andy Serkis, but other characters and their Oscar-worthy performances. I was wondering, do you think that performance capture has advanced to the point that that's where it should go? The Academy should take a good look at that. I mean, they have these makeup levels and whatnot, but performance capture seems to be the one that eludes that sort of recognition.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I tell people when they ask me that question is I always say you should watch the performance without the ape on top. And when you see that and you witness that, and, you know, I had scenes with Andy where I'm just like, holy mama. I mean, people are like, whoa, what was that? Where did that come from? And then, you know, I don't even think they can translate some of that goodness yet through these characters. I mean, because what I think is the grading system or however they decide should be viewed on the performance, the actual actors, you know, with the camera on. And then they can watch that performance and go, whoa, yes, okay, I see it. It's all on camera. It's all in the shots. It's all there. When we thought, you know, God, it'd be great to just watch the movie with just us in our performance capture suits, you know, and see how that played. Because I'm sure it's, like, really interesting.
Yeah.
You know? And so my answer to that is absolutely yes. I just, you know, I think that once people feel that someone's performance is being tweaked or modified or embellished, then it's not a true performance. But I think when you see the performance in its you know, original state, you would change your mind on that.
Terry. This is just incredible. I really, truly appreciate all the insight you brought.
Absolutely.
I'm genuinely, genuinely thankful and fascinated by everything you were talking about. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to start teaching workshops outside of the film industry.
Oh, good.
I'm going to start. Yeah, we're opening a 10,000 square foot dance studio in Sherman Oaks called the Industry Dance Academy. And I'm going to start teaching workshops there. So I'm gonna bring all this what I've learned over the past, you know, 18 years to people that, you know, aren't actually working on blockbuster movies.
Yeah. No, it's great. I feel like I've learned a lot today, so I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.